Hi, everybody, and welcome to the FinOps Nexus podcast. I'm your host, John Meyer, and joining me today is Merritt Hughes. Merritt, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, John. You know, I'm always happy to come here and talk about FinOps with you.
Well, our topic today is FinOps in the public sector. And is it possible? You know what, Merritt? Let's talk a little bit more about the public sector and FinOps. Can we do it and can we achieve it?
Well, since FinOps is a cultural practice and not a permanent end state, yes, absolutely. FinOps can and should be done in public sector. Many agencies, both state, local, and federal, including state, local, and federal, are implementing FinOps to some degree. Probably not many have reached run, but there's no reason that walk and crawl don't coexist. And, you know, as we all know, you could be at run on one capability and walk on another. Or crawl at some that you haven't even started with. So that was a very long answer to say, yes, it absolutely can and should be done in public sector and is being done.
Okay, when you implement FinOps and as a cultural practice, I know let's just talk about it. We all know with the government and the public sector, things take a little bit of time to implement and you can't implement things as quick as possible that you would like to. Going back to my original question of, can you implement FinOps within the public sector? Can you successfully implement it in a time-oriented fashion? Let's put it that way.
So the biggest hurdle kind of at the beginning is getting it integrated into processes that already exist. So if you think about a change management processes already exist. They're there. What we're now looking for is how do we put a FinOps lens into that change management process? So it might take a while to get everybody to sign off on that the snow ticket now has a new link to the cost calculator and developing the new habits of actually comparing that cost to what is available for budgeting, what is being spent currently. But so it's not as fast as in a small scale, because in a large scale enterprise, very similar issues, honestly. But if you think of a small SaaS startup, for example, you can just go to the CEO and say, we're doing this, right? The CEO goes, yes. And if he doesn't, the CFO turns around and she says, yes, right? And it just takes longer, but that doesn't mean don't try and don't start. But once it's there, it's going through the same change management process as anything. If you apply it to a different component, so it's not the change management process, it's a large scale optimization effort where you're trying to get rid of idle resources. It does take longer to go through the validation process to make sure that it can be shut down because no one wants to do scream testing on a system that turned out to host the database that provides, I don't know, soldiers' family information for the PX validation system. Scream testing is just not really a thing in public sector because of the dependencies and what you could break. So it takes longer, but it gets done. It just can make some, again, small scale commercial entities feel a little cringy about how long it takes. But I promise you, if you go to a large scale banking system, they probably, with the exception of Capital One, because we know that they are kind of front runners in the cloud FinOps space, but a lot of the older, more traditionalist finance sectors, I'm going to bet, and insurance sectors, I bet you're going to find their processes are just as long.
I think that would be my concern going into like a public sector within, if you look at traditional like enterprise outside of public sector, you know, the speed and agility to make changes. You look at a cost optimization, you can go all to the business and the finance and say, yes, we're in a room, we agree, we should shut these things down or reduce this cost. Yes, the next day it's done. But that doesn't seem to be the entire case in public sector because you have to go through all the checks and balances, the change management. And in some cases, it's better to leave those resources running.
Yep. And it can be a hard thing for folks to understand, especially there's a lot of, but that's taxpayer money, right? As a taxpayer myself, I very much care about taxpayer money. The thing to understand is what is dependent on those resources And I am sure we have all left something running in our house that technically we should shut down, right?
I'll be right back.
Yeah, exactly. How many of us fully unplug our TVs when we leave on vacation and unplug our printers and our Alexas and all of that stuff because we've left on vacation? We all say it is 32 cents worth of electricity for me to be gone for a month with these things plugged in versus the effort to go around, unplug all of those things. When I come back, reprogram all of those things. So understanding that there's a lot of trade-offs that happen, even in commercial, even if you're a SaaS startup or a huge enterprise, trade-offs have to be made in terms of time, cost, and resources available. And those resources are not always just the cloud infrastructure. You know, you've got to pull somebody to take action on that instead of stabilizing the system that's running the Social Security checks this month, or the system that is, this reference is now probably a little outdated, but the system that was tracking all of the vaccines for COVID. Do you really want to dedicate a whole bunch of time to going and saving, let's call it $1,000 a month? Right? That's not where those priorities lie, and the prioritizations can be very different. That said, cost avoidance is a big concern in the government, right? The budgets are getting tighter. Congress doesn't like to fund full years anymore. So constantly working on incremental funding. So absolutely there are priorities of how can we get to some cost avoidance? How can we reduce spend for unneeded resources, but it just has to get prioritized against the bigger picture. And I think what you'll find in commercial is a lot of folks say that they have robust FinOps practices, and a lot of them have focused on just one capability, and it's almost always commitment management. A lot of enterprise solves their money. The amount of their bill issue through commitments versus through optimization architecture, right?
You're talking about rate in general, right?
Yes, rate optimization. So on, particularly in the federal government, this is less of an issue in state and local. Rate optimization is very difficult, but that's probably a whole separate podcast topic.
I'm taking a note on that. We will talk about rate optimization on the next podcast. Anyway, go ahead.
Absolutely. There's a couple of federal agencies that are real leaders in FinOps. Melvin Brown's the deputy CIO for OPM. Laura Sackmary, who is with GSA, her role has changed recently. That has not stopped her from being a FinOps advocate, even if it's no longer under her domain. And really, they have to take the approach that works best for their respective organizations. There isn't, just like for enterprise, there isn't a one-size-fits-all start here. But for all of them, it is figuring out how to intersect the executive orders that come out, the legislation that comes out, the rules and policies that come out relative to how are they going to plan and manage and predict those costs. So I would say while they do have a distinct interest in cost avoidance, it is also being able to forecast. So for those of you who are partway through 2024, you're feeling very good with your 2024 budget and your forecasting, and maybe you've started to forecast into Q1 of 2025, federal agencies have already had to submit their 2026 estimated budget for their cloud.
What?
Except,
wait a second.
Except even... I know one agency that has actually had to do their 2028. So this is how long...
How is that possible?
Exactly, right? And a huge part of FinOps is forecasting. Right? And knowing what your budget is and what have you. And remember, they're not cloud native. They're still active migrations. And clouds will come out with new features and new architectures and new serverless thingies between now and 2026. But they've had to start to really think forward of how. So a few years ago now, there was an executive order for Zero Trust, which talked about the amount of logging that needed to be done, how long those logs needed to be retained, whether they needed to be in cold and hot storage. And the fear-based answer to that executive order was turn on every log possible at the highest granularity possible, and then watch the bills.
I can see where this is going.
Watch the bills explode, right? Thankfully, most of them had budgets and alerts on and watched as their cloud bill skyrocketed in a single weekend after turning that on, right? So they've learned to
bet
take...
But you can't forecast that.
Right? So exactly. And these are the things that need to be built in. So you have, they've had to learn how to win, again, whether it's an executive order, whether it's a regulation, whether it's a new leading best practice from a cloud provider, to start to anticipate its impact on costs. So for those of you who think you have conservative retention policies because you have to keep things in archive for 5 to 7 years, typically our minimum is 10 years, and it generally has to spend, it depends on the purpose. There are certainly things that after 60 days you can lifecycle straight to archive, but that logging example I gave, if I recall correctly, which I may not because it may be longer than my memory serves, it's 18 months in hot storage before you can move it to archive. And we are talking about logs for large federal agency systems. So this is a significant amount of storage that you have to leave in hot storage. AWS Storage Lens will not help you. Infrequent access may or may not meet the cut for hot storage. So all of these factors have to come in, and then they have to be forecasted, and you have to predict things that haven't happened yet. And they're not as granular as a forecast for next quarter will be. But it is probably where agencies have really started their FinOps, is in trying to figure out what their future costs will be, more over optimizing current costs.
Merritt, we're almost out of time because we're leaving this to like 15 minutes, and everybody, yep, we're talking about FinOps and public sector, and you're talking about forecasting. Here's a question, though. Are public sector using or trying to utilize the same tools that commercial is in order to forecast their cloud or their budgets around things?
So tooling is an interesting question, particularly, again, in federal. State and local has some other approaches to it because they're not set to the same regulations as federal is. Most federal agencies have a tool of some sort outside of the cloud native tool. Federal in particular has to do a lot of intersection with ITAM and TBM. So they very well may have a tool that also does, or their ServiceNow instance with its cost things, right? So a lot of tools now have started to pull in FinOps components into their tool. So what often happens is that one agency will have 3 or 4 different tools with overlapping feature sets. So it's like a giant Venn diagram of tools, all of whom say that they have a FinOps capability, but they're different capabilities doing different things. And the reality is most tools actually aren't good at forecasting. They're good at predicting what's going to happen to your current bill based off of, or your future bill based off of what's currently in your account. They are not good at letting you know that you have a scheduled migration for next quarter that is bringing in 57 new instances, each of which have 2 EBS volumes, and it's going to run a terabyte of data transfer to the web every month, right? Forecasting tools don't help with that. A lot of folks really want kind of a modeling tool, but the reality is tools do not contain shakers of salt. That always has to come from the people who are familiar with what's happening, what's planned to be happening, honestly, a little bit with the conflicting priorities. So I, for example, might know that there's an internal battle between program leader A and program leader B about whose thing is most important. Right. A forecasting tool won't know that program leader B is probably going to win because he's got a better business case, right? And all of those challenges, I think, are part of the why people will never be replaced by a tool in FinOps. And honestly, if you can be replaced by a tool in FinOps, I might suggest that you need to expand outside of the rate optimization component of the FinOps framework.
When you were talking about the forecasting and it basically visibility, it comes down to visibility. Your current tool is providing a predictability based off of your current usage and your last month users. And there's two things in there. One, visibility into everything that's happening.
Absolutely.
And then you also have the people component of it, where people know more about what's being happening and transferring and migrating across of it. That's not in your visibility tool because it can't see what potentially might be happening. And you have to put that in and almost in a manual aspect because it's not looking at a migration unless that wasn't put in there into some type of automation.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, I mean, visibility is such a challenging thing because what we battle a lot with is, great, we created visibility for you, but it now falls into alert fatigue. And one more email in your box you haven't had a chance to look at. And I say this, anyone listening who's wondering why I haven't responded to them in 3 weeks or 3 months, it's lost in my inbox.
Just email again.
John tried it. That's how John got me here. But it's true.
Persistence pays off.
But it is true of your cloud spend as well, that we can create all the dashboards in the world. But if people aren't looking at them, you know, we all know half the information in a large enterprise, no matter how many emails you send out, comes from you guys were sitting in a meeting and a sidebar conversation took place. And somebody went, wait, what? That exists? And you're like, there are 37 inboxes or emails in your inbox that went out. It's in the mall with a link to the dashboard. I never saw it, right? So, and that's again where people come in, right? They're the ones making those connections. On kind of a fuzzier way, but it tends to be more effective at getting notice, which doesn't mean you shouldn't have the dashboards and you shouldn't have the reporting, because you absolutely do need that, because you need to be able to send those people who are now interested someplace to self-serve, because you can't manually serve them data every time. That's not sustainable either. But you've got to have that fuzzy, warm people connection. Get them in the web of FinOps like a spider web.
First of all, before I do wrap it up, you want to give a shout out to anybody or any advice to the people listening?
So first, the big shout out is to particularly the public sector leaders of FinOps, Melvin and Laura Sackmary, originally also included Laura Mills, but also to the Deloitte GPS FinOps team. We are here to help the government, whether state, local, or federal, make some of these problems a little less painful and help them get those budgets in for 2029.
By the way, everybody, this is only 2024 while this podcast is being recorded. All right, Barrett, thank you so much for joining me.
Great. Thank you so much.
Everybody, this has been the FinOps Nexus podcast. I'm your host, John Meyer. And guess what? Don't forget to hit that like, subscribe, and notify, because we're out of here.